Do you have it in you to make it epic? Hello and welcome to episode 153 of Ribbon of Memes, a podcast where we interrogate films previously described by other survivors of the apocalypse. Not sure we've necessarily survived it yet, but as masterpieces. I am Nick, the enigmatic road warrior of this film, and I'm joined as ever by Roger.
I guess I'm the cult leader then.
And it's we the beard. Are returning to Max Miller, he's a cheeky chappy from from music hall days, George Miller's increasingly broad in scope Mad Max saga. And in fact, this is specifically titled a Mad Max saga, even though Mad Max isn't in the film. Well, not much. This is Furiosa from 2024.
That is this the same year as we're recording, yeah.
I know. Is this the first time we've done a film from the same year?
Quite possibly.
It may be. It may be. We have previously seen episode for our... we've previously looked at all the other Mad Max films, including Fury Road from 2016 or something like that, so almost 10 years ago.
Yeah, so that was episode 86. Gosh, that was a long time ago.
It was, wasn't it? Overall, we very much enjoyed the Mad Max. I think we particularly enjoyed the ones that everyone else particularly enjoyed, which was Mad Max 2 and Mad Max 4. But we found things to like about Mad Max 1 and Beyond Thunderdome. Did we find anything to like about the Mad Max-less Furiosa? That's the question.
Just to sum it up in one and a half syllables, yes.
I will be more full-throated, yes, but we will investigate why. So this is actually the timeline of the Mad Max saga is a bit nonsensical
corrupted.
Anyway. Yeah, so I think we can at least say it's a prequel to Fury Road.
That is explicit.
Yes.
There is no suggestion that anybody remembers the world before, except in very minor ways. So yeah, it is some years later, one feels.
Yes.
Even though we get the usual, the world is going mad, voiceover stuff at the beginning.
Yeah, I thought that was a bit on the nose for me, that. But this is, the timeline's corrupt because canonically, I guess, Max Rockatinsky is supposed to have been in that world and now he's in the post-apocalyptic world, even though all the other people who were children then have grown up post-apocalyptically. Anyway, this is the story of Furiosa, who is the warrior for...
I seem to remember we regarded her as really the subject of Fury Road.
Yes, I think we did. And Mad Max
is much more about her than it is about Max.
Portrayed by Charlize Theron in Fury Road as the are they Praetorians, lieutenants of Immortan Joe. But here we have her played by Anna Taylor-Joy.
Well, eventually.
Eventually, we have a. An even younger, as a young girl, who plays her as a young girl?
Alila Brown. I hope I've got the pronunciation right there. And frankly, I'm very impressed with her here.
Yeah. I mean, there's a very, Mad Maxy sort of acting style, which is kind of both the characters are either really buttoned down, a la Furiosa or Max, or absolutely nuts over the top, a la everyone else, and particularly, is it Demento?
Dementus,
who is played by Chris Hemsworth.
Who is absolutely hamming it up, yeah. Clearly having a great time.
But, and expected to as well. I think it's a bit like the, I don't know, the George Lucas style of bizarre stilted thespian that he was going for in the prequel trilogy. Here, obviously, you're absolutely over the top nuts if you're supposed to be. So he's playing it.
We even get that mentioned later on. Basically, you either try to be sensible and it's way too late for anybody to be that, or you just indulge in the madness and see where it takes you.
Yes,
that seems to be his philosophy of life.
Well, it seems to work well. He's wearing a bizarre prosthetic nose as well, Chris Hemsworth, so he looks less Chris Hemsworth, I think, and a bit more bizarre. So, it is the story of Furiosa. So in Fury Road, we had a breaking out in Morton Joe's wives. We don't, I suppose you don't, it's never explicitly stated why she wanted to escape the clutches of this wasteland overlord and get back to the place where she came from and rescue all these people. So it's a, I suppose, a slight surprise in Fury Road. Well, here it is explicitly stated exactly where she came from and why she wants to get back there.
Yeah, I will confess I had a certain certain amount of the same feeling I got reading about I Haven't Seen It Solo, which, you know, it is billed as the earlier life of Han Solo, but it turns out to be every single thing that you found an endearing habit in the main film now has a scene explaining where it came from.
An origin story.
This isn't entirely that. I did enjoy this, but I did at times feel that it was a bit clunky just in terms of how much it had to establish.
Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade is the first film I remember that happening, where he whips the lion as a kid and he manages to whip his chin, and then we've got an explanation to why Indiana Jones has a scar on his chin and where he gets the hat from, and it's the building of the legend. And I think you're right, every prequel since then every character-based prequel has felt the need to do that. Maybe that wasn't the first time. It's the first time I was consciously aware of it. But you're right. We have it here with Furiosa. We have her as a young girl, in the Land of Plenty, which never quite explained. The rest of the place is just dust and death. But she is in this oasis of places where trees grow. And she is taken from there by bandits to another place, to Dementus's domain. She's taken by his henchmen. And straight away we're into Mad Max territory then. These are crazy. They all wear skulls on their heads and kind of slightly kinky leather gear, which we talked about at length in the last, in our last Mad Max episode. But we're pretty given a very quick idea that Furiosa is a very competent character, that she's not just going to scream and be a typical scream queen. She is, I think it's great to have strong female characters, and I think she is a really good female character. To be fair, though, you could have changed her name to Max Rokotinsky, and you would not have noticed much difference for the film. She's basically the same buttoned-down, emotionless but hyper competent character.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
But the film becomes a sort of protracted revenge flick because her mum tries to come and rescue her, and she falls foul of Dementus, who tortures her to death.
Yeah, important lesson here: snipers work in pairs. You're much more effective as a sniper if you're just one of you.
I think one of the cruelest things in the film, which I don't know if the film did, is her mum has basically given up her life so her daughter can escape. And then her daughter comes up and screams and says, oh, so her mum knows that her whole life was then wasted, futile, because her daughter's come back anyway and she's going to get caught by Dementus. Anyway, very depressed. Where is all the other Mad Max films? Certainly the ones we liked, which were 2 and 4. That's not fair. We liked a lot about 3 and 1. But the most memorable films, Mad Max 2 and Fury Road. Fury Road is basically Mad Max 2 rerun and stretched out the exciting road bit over the whole film. They're much narrower in scope and they're very small things. This is the saga, the story of Furiosa, why she hates Dementus, and the sort of convoluted path that her life follows to get revenge on him.
Yeah, it is spread out over a pretty extended period as well.
It is. I don't know if going beat by beat through the plot is that useful here. It is a bit convoluted in that she changes hands a few times, in that she's sort of a slave. Then she becomes Immortan Joe's valued lieutenant through hypercompetency, basically.
Yeah.
She sort of has a lover in, is it Praetorian Jack? I think he's, yeah, he is in the film. Who is another?
Or at least he might be. I mean, it's not explicit.
No, but he's basically, well, if you change his name to Max Rokotinsky, well, you wouldn't notice much different. He's that kind of character. And so we see the, well, I was about to say development of a character, but I'm not all about character development. I don't need to see it, but there isn't a lot of development of character. It's a, I am not normally a fan of revenge flicks, if I'm honest. But I do think if I was, this one would work for me because it does go a bit into the nature of revenge and what you're actually getting out of it and what's the point of it.
Yeah.
A bit.
And basically, when Dementus has finally been isolated and caught by Furiosa, no spoiler, I mean, it's obvious that's how it's going to go. Apart from anything else, he isn't in Fury Road.
yes.
They have that conversation and... Yeah, it's... I'm not sure it entirely holds together, but at least you can see what they're trying to do.
I like his character is unrepentant, and almost like on... He's not bitter that this has been... He knew it was going to happen. It's happened with her. He knew it was going to happen with someone, and he's kind of...
I think what his point is, more than anything else, is... Right, well, you have beaten me. All you can do from here is become the next insane warlord.
Yeah.
Because there is nothing else, there is nowhere else you can go from here.
I've been there, yeah. I've done this, and this is how I ended up. Yeah, I do think, so as far as, you know, we were talking about that, so we've skipped to the end of the film a little bit, but we were talking about, the acting, and I sidetracked you a little bit because we have the very young Furiosa, Alaya Brown, who has been, and this may become something you want to talk about, she has been slightly altered CG-wise to make her look more like Anna Taylor-Brown later on in the film. And this is a film that is less... I think that the kind of myth that Fury Road is this... film that doesn't have CGI in it, it's all practical effects. That's not true. That I think there's CGI in almost every shot in Fury Road as well, but there are a lot of practical effects.
I think most of it is changing backgrounds and stuff like that rather than making things happen in the foreground. There was one shot in particular, and spoilers for the film, the death of the Octoboss, so this guy with twirly black horns on his helmet. He's coming in behind one of the war rigs. There are several war rigs in this film. On a motor glider. And they finally spin up the weapon of doom and he is mangled by it. And that's a great scene, except, oh boy, that's so painfully obviously CGI, that particular shot, that after that I couldn't take... Granted, this is a problem with me watching the film as much as it is a problem with the film. But after that, I just found myself watching for the next bit of blatant CGI. I just didn't feel I could trust it anymore. I like the physicality of the earlier films. You know, somebody falls off a truck and gets run over. Okay, it's not a stuntman, but it is an actual dummy that's the right weight. It moves right. It's got the right inertia.
Well, I guess it switches it. Now, that didn't happen to me, possibly because I watched it on a plane and I was very jet-lagged. And so I never got that moment that I did. And I remember that happening to me in films. It happened to me in The Phantom Menace, for sure. In Lord of the Rings, when they're all running down in Moria, there's a moment where I suddenly took a step back and thought, this is like watching someone else play a PlayStation game. And I found it very hard to focus after that. So I absolutely understand why that takes you out of it. It does spoil. And it's hard that it's got, I think George Miller suffers a little bit from the reputation that Fury Road has, that it is all physical effects and very little CGI, which is not true, but it is at least got some truth to it in that he did rely more on physical effects and Furiosa relies more on CGI. And I mean,
there is still, I suspect, plenty of actual physical effect happening, but there are some bits like where the bikes get sideswiped in the final chase. We've got a car sideswiping bikes, and okay, that is quite hard to do safely. I feel that this film series' unique selling point was, I will do the practical effects that nobody else dares do.
I'm not sure. Was it that before Fury Road? I suppose it was, really, yeah. Would it matter to you then, as a principle, if it was all CGI, but it looked exactly like it does in Mad Max 2? Yeah. So is it more the principle of the thing, or is it how it appears on screen, or is it both?
It's the fact that it has suddenly been changed, I think. Here was the film's distinctive thing, and now it doesn't have that distinctive thing anymore. Why am I still watching it? I mean, there are other reasons to watch it, but one of them has just been taken away.
So for me, the distinctive thing about Mad Max is that we've talked about already, the utterly nuts, over-the-top villains, the kind of weirdly kinky outfits for no reason, and the absolutely over-the-top kind of caricatures of... And they're all here, you know, we have the cult that screams witness, I forget their name, they scream witness and spray their face with chrome before they kill themselves. We have the history man. I love the concept of the history man. He's tattooed every part of his body. It's nonsense. I mean, we've still got paper. Come on. I love the concepts and the future and the weird post-apocalyptic world that is, it's as much fantasy as anything else. But I enjoyed revisiting that world and these crazy characters and these giant citadels in the middle of nowhere and the kind of silliness of it all that they kind of revel in. There's a weird kind of, there's no other world quite like it, and lots of other worlds have tried to copy Mad Max. Mm-hmm. I think less well, particularly Fallout, I think, but not quite done it well. I admit a big part of that is kind of motors and V8 engines and thrumming and zooming across the desert with sand blaring in the background, which is why I think Mad Max 3 was less successful, because that followed a more logical premise that
there is a great big final chase scene, but only right at the end.
Yes, and the idea is that, everyone's run out of petrol now. They can't keep driving around in all this stuff anymore. And that was less successful because of it. But for me, the world building works really quite well. And I think that is a reason to revisit the world. I like the world that George Miller's created. Bonkers though it is.
Yeah. There was one thing that just struck me as a bit off. And now I can't say for sure that, other people have not commented on this that I've seen. Maybe it's just my interface with the world. There is a sequence where they are building a war rig. It's clearly not the very first war rig. They know what a war rig is conceptually. It is a truck that is set up to defend itself.
A heavily armoured, large capacity.
But yeah, they are building it. And it struck me that in the previous films, we've never seen anything being built. It always starts with, here are the things which we have painstakingly, either we've kept them from the old days or we have painstakingly built them up over years. But here are the things. And during the course of the film, they all get smashed. And at the end of it, there is Max walking away across the desert.
That's a good point. Yes. I think that is fair in that this suggests there is some existing kind of technology. In the previous films, it's been, a rare and precious thing, and once it's gone, it's gone, and anyone with any kind of knowledge like that is super valuable. But here they can just build not just one, but they've almost got like a production line of war. It's clearly a big thing for them to do.
Mm.
but it is a thing that they've done before and will do again. Which, that's fair.
I mean, I don't want to say this film should be just like the last four, but it felt out of tune to me. So, yeah.
I didn't... well, maybe I did. Because thinking back to that sequence, I didn't enjoy it so much. I think you're right. The suggestion that they can just get scrap parts and build a whole new truck... Yeah, that does feel a bit off as far as the film goes. I'll give you that.
So, Hugh Keysburn had died by the pine this was being made, so they needed a new guy for Immortan Joe, but fortunately his face was mostly behind a mask anyway.
It's hard to notice the difference, yeah. I'm afraid. Much as we enjoyed him in Mad Max 1 and his return in Fury Road, he's not... the character is, to all intents and purposes, identical.
So... Okay, so for as far as casting is concerned, as far as George Miller's account of this was, basically either they could CGI de-age Charlize Theron, which he thought would look terrible, and I would agree with him, it does look pretty terrible.
De-aging doesn't work.
Or they could use a new actor. I can't help feeling that they could probably have done a reasonably good job just with makeup. But, yeah, maybe that's me. Just because Anya Taylor-Joy is not terrible here, but frankly, Anila Brown is better.
Okay, yeah.
And Charlize Theron is way better.
I think that is fair. Charlize Theron is absolutely standout in Fury Road, and Anya Taylor-Joy is, well, I know, I think she's very good. It's hard to put her next to Charlize Theron, to be fair. There is a humanity that comes across in Charlize Theron's character. I think that's fair. Thinking back to Fury Road, there's kind of a desperation, but there's a core of humanity that comes across. I think Anya Taylor-Joy, as I say, the reason I think she's kind of interchangeable with Max is that she's just kind of deadpan and emotionless. Mm. She does it really well. And it's great to have a female character like that.
The Wikipedia page suggests, and I won't say it's wrong, that she only has about 30 spoken lines through the entire film.
Well, apparently she fought a lot. So I think one reason they wouldn't use makeup, I doubt Charlize Theron would have come back. She had a pretty horrible time making Fury Road, as far as I can tell. And I think that has got a lot to do with the actor who played Max, Tom Hardy. I don't think Anya Taylor-Joy had a great time making this film either. I, as far as I could tell, there's no suggestion of kind of Harvey Weinstein style horrors from George Miller. But I think he wants a certain mindset with his actors, and he puts them through the ringer to get it.
Mm. There was, towards the end, where we're starting to overlap with the events in Fury Road, and I don't know whether this is explicit. The impression I got with Fury Road was that there wasn't a huge gap between Max on the clifftop at the start of the film, Max gets captured, Max goes out again as a mobile blood bag. That all seemed to me to be happening in fairly short order.
Yeah, not in years or months, I agree, yes.
Whereas here we see him on the clifftop there is a credit for Max Rohatansky. He's clearly meant to be the same guy.
Double, I think, from
Sure. But then there is meant to be the 40-day wasteland war and all the stuff that happens afterwards before we get to the main event of Fury Road, which is clearly happening at the end. We're seeing Furiosa breaking the wives out.
Well, now, is my impression was that Max wasn't the same. Well, it's the same Max, but that was a previous timeline. This was Max earlier than Fury Road. It's implied that he rescues Furiosa and takes her somewhere, takes her to this weird underground slaughterhouse and leaves her there. And I thought then he went on to Fury Road after that. I may have misinterpreted.
Wasn't the impression I got, but yeah, I can't say you're wrong. The other thing, I've been quite negative. I just have really one last negative thing to say, which is this is a 2.5-hour film. And even Fury Road was only 2 hours.
Well, okay, fair enough. Now, I was on a flight that lasted 8 hours, so I was quite happy. Maybe it just caught me in the right time. Okay, yeah, I felt much more positive about this film until we started talking about it.
And I did enjoy it. I think that I've been complaining about things, but overall it does work. Most of the physicality does work. The battles mostly work. I just didn't get quite the same sense of, I know why this battle is happening. It's just, well, I want all the stuff. You have some of the stuff. Therefore, I will fight you and try to take some of the stuff.
It's a little convoluted politics, which is probably not the ideal format for it. That's fair enough.
And perhaps also nobody really except Furiosa and to some extent Jack is a good guy. You know, they are all raiders raiding raiders. They're not even raiding civilians.
Yes. Well, and Furiosa's motivations is revenge. Now she knows will end up with a quite altruistic Furiosa. Yeah. That's fair. Also, okay, the real solo
moment. Sorry, I just say the real solo moment for me. She knows she wants to get back to where she originally came from. So she self tattoos a map onto her arm, and that was really the solo moment for me. That okay, yep, she's going to lose the arm.
Yeah,
because she has to lose the arm, and having the tattoo of how to get home on the arm that she's going to lose makes it dramatically significant. Also, omnicompetence, as you say, making prosthetics is hard, especially doing it yourself when you've never done it before.
Ones that actually respond to your nerve impulses.
I think we have to assume that there are some muscle fibres left above the elbow, and you're tagging the claws onto some of the biceps and triceps ends.
That
used to be done before the nerve impulse thing got invented in the real world.
Now that didn't work. That didn't ruin it for me because I'd forgotten Furiosa only had one arm in Fury Road. It was only when she put the prosthetic arm on there that, oh yeah, that's what she's like in Furiosa, in Mad Max Fury Road. Oh, well, you put me off the film a bit there, Roger.
Sorry.
Do you know, I think the thing that has swung me is that when you reminded me how good Charlize Theron is in Fury Road, and I'm thinking back to her character, there is a real... She gets similarly few spoken lines. She's similarly grim and buttoned down, but there's a real depth under the surface to Furiosa in that film.
I think my feeling overall is I would go back and watch 2 or 4 on their own.
Right.
I would watch the others, including this, as part of I will watch all the films, which I can quite certainly see myself doing. I don't particularly want to dive into this on its own.
Okay, how did you feel about Chris Hemsworth as Dementor?
The term I love for this is the Maria Frankenstein sandwich. Inspired by the film Jesse James Meets Frankenstein's Daughter. The acting style for Maria Frankenstein is described there as ham sliced thick with plenty of relish.
Well,
he is absolutely indulging it.
I would argue that is the Daniel Day-Lewis school of acting. I'm an oil man. Fair enough. It worked well for me.
And to be fair, this is not just Chris Hemsworth having a great time, though he clearly is. This is the character of Dementors having decided that this is the way he has to be. It is essentially his mental health protocol for this crazy world.
Yes, I like
to be crazier than any other bastard in it.
Yeah, it's sort of like a bit Joker-esque, not the terrible recent Joker film, but the kind of, you know, if you can't get even, get mad. That's kind of his approach, and I liked the depth is a bit strong, but I he's not just a one-dimensional villain, and he's a very self-aware villain, a bit like Alan Rickman in Die Hard, which always makes him a bit more likable, I think. I very much enjoyed his performance. And I liked we will leave one spoiler, I suppose. He asks, can she make it epic? For me, that what she does is quite epic, even if it's a bit unrealistic. I quite like the ending of that.
Yeah, it does work.
All right, well, you've turned me right off. I enjoyed it. And I was prepared to sort of not be swayed by CGI arguments, because it didn't take me away particularly. I didn't mind the lack of CGI. I enjoyed the brief humanity between Praetorian Jack and her, and the moments of tenderness almost, which I gather she had to really fight for to be able to portray. But I think you've convinced me on the strength that fine actor though she is, Anya Taylor-Joy is not Charlize Theron. And the whole plot is a bit more disjointed and confusing. Like the whole 40-day wasteland war, we barely see any of it, and we don't really understand what's happening, and it sort of skips to the end.
What it mostly comes down to is there are three places where you can live, and there are four guys who want to be in charge.
Keep it simple. That's what I like.
Mm.
I enjoyed it lots. But you've talked me down.
I enjoyed it a bit. Not as much as I had hoped. Possibly again, this after Fury Road, which I did love.
I'm going to have to watch Fury Road again now. Okay. I will be sad. Though Fury Road did incredibly well and won some Oscars and made a load of money, Furiosa absolutely tanked.
Obviously the reason that the film companies will ascribe to this is it had women in it. It had a female lead, and film companies are always desperate to say a film with a female lead did badly, therefore we won't make any films with female leads for another 5 years.
Yes, yeah. Well, the American presidential election tried a similar thing. Anyway, they did it with Ghostbusters too. To be fair, the Ghostbusters film wasn't amazing, but neither of the other ones that have been super successful afterwards.
Bits of it were good. Bits of it were not. We might go and talk about that at some point.
I'll tell you who was in that. Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah.
Anyway. But lots of other stronger female characters than Chris Hemsworth. Anyway, there we are. Furiosa. I no longer think it's a masterpiece. Thank you, Roger.
Sorry. I wouldn't argue that. I did like it. But I really... If we were doing absolute max rankings, I mean, number four is still top for me. Number two is still second for me. I think this might come in sort of evenish with number one.
Oh, okay. I would put it higher than number one, but I don't know. Talk to you a bit longer, I'll be putting it in with The Phantom Menace. All right. Well done. Well done. Thank you, Roger. Anyway, that was an interesting discussion. Very helpful.
All I've got to say is what, frankly, more post-apocalyptic films should have somebody saying, run the numbers!